Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 15th on the West Coast, now June the 16th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I want to welcome all the people that are listening to us around the world, many, many people. We know there's some listeners in Australia. Some folks that Drew Raines brought on board, also in Sochi, Russia, London, England, believe it or not, and I think we've got somebody in Scotland, Ireland, and points beyond. So nice to have you all tuning in to the show, whatever time you are listening to this show. You may be listening on an archive, but we will put a lot of energy in it, and you'll think that you're listening to live radio. Well, lots going on. I thought I might mention the recent publication of information regarding the embezzlement that we so often talk about on this show, the trillions of dollars that are being stolen and assigned to every American citizen. It's now over $38,000 each of some 300 million plus American citizens. This is the debt that they're racking up on our behalf. And recently, a delegation of international interested parties who were part of the Tier 1 through 10 payments that we've been discussing have been in the Washington and New York areas tracking funding that they're supposed to receive. However, first in line are some banks here in the States where people actually put up their own investment capital to reap a reward over time. And the Bush cabal had been stealing it. The Clintons had been stealing it along with the Bush cabal. And then enter Barack Obama, and illegal usurper Barack Obama, where's the birth certificate? And he has been trying to steal all this money for himself. Now, recently, within the past 24 hours, he was trying to negotiate with a second team of people who were sent from these delegate countries, representing, by the way, the World Court, and some other interests that are supposedly trying to bring about a solution and a legal solution and stop this corruption. Well, Obama, as a last-ditch effort, was trying to negotiate a 50-50 split with these foreign entities. In other words, they get 50% of trillions of dollars, and then Obama gets the rest of it. Now, I'm actually referring to several reports that seem to jive together, although they came from different sources. It sounds quite familiar, and I'm privy to some information personally that shows that this is true. There are actual Treasury funds that are backed by Treasury certificates. And these monies have been stolen. I know specifically of people from whom these funds have been stolen. So when I talk about this, this is not rumor. This is not conjecture. This is based upon fact. This has been going on for a number of years, by the way. And so I'm going to stay on top of this, nonetheless. And report this, but I thought it was quite interesting that as a means of saving his own rear end, Obama decided he would split this money, which is not his, and it doesn't really belong to these other parties other than any negotiations that were worked out in the process of stealing these funds initially and collateralizing them, or attempting to collateralize them. Now, because they're all in offshore accounts, they don't meet the Basel III agreements. They're virtually going to bankrupt the Federal Reserve when it comes down to having to prove source of funds. They cannot do it. And so they are, for all intents and purposes, bankrupt. Now, taking that into consideration, if you're watching the news, everything that's happening everywhere else is just a diversion to keep your eyes and ears and your minds off the fact that this money is being stolen. How is it that 300 million people can be assigned a debt of $38,000 plus each to be covered by these bailouts of banks and insurance companies, colleges, mortgage companies, and to cover student loans, and this money is just going to be handed out to people left and right under the auspice of a sort of not just a bailout but a special stimulus package, they like to call it now. Stimulus. Who's being stimulated here, us or them? Obviously, if you were stealing trillions of dollars, you'd be pretty stimulated if you were getting away with it. And Obama's going to have to face up to this. There have been numerous accounts by intel people that that threats have been made that certain individuals are going to be arrested for the obfuscation of these thefts. And the Pentagon is involved in it. They know it. And all the people in the banks who are expecting these funds know it. And I just want you to keep your eyes and ears open, because the mainstream media knows this is going on, as well as a recent reference to the fact that the Pentagon and the media are acknowledging that they're aware that Barack Obama probably is not eligible to be president of the United States, at least the Republic. And so chew on that this evening as you listen to tonight's guest. He is a co-publisher, co-editor of a national newspaper known as the Idaho Observer. I happen to write for that paper, have since January of 2007, on and off, when I compose a book that we can condense down to a few pages in the paper. And
that's a very appropriate analogy, by the way.
And he is now a good friend. He's here alone tonight, not with his better half. My good friend, publisher and editor of the Idaho Observer, Mr. Don Harkins. Don, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Don. It's good to be here, and, you know, it is really something. I'm looking at all of the things that are happening, because right now we're in the, we call it the paper phase, the paper production phase for June. We're coming out around the middle of the month, and this month it'll be around the 21st, I believe. And just watching it all play out, all of the things that are up in the air, and how all of these different things are serving as covers for the other, and perhaps what we're really seeing is a big mass of confusion and fear and even disgust that is being generated among the people of this country, so that all of these other things can continue rolling on through. And it's really, it's just quite something. And mm-hmm. I see what you're talking about with the bailout stuff is, all if you look at things as if this is a national economy and the rules are different than your own personal economy or your household economy, then you can be fooled into believing that things of national importance and things that are much bigger, much more complicated than you and I could ever understand are taking place, and that we must pay attention to the advice and counsel of experts, and we must trust what they're doing is for the betterment of mankind, the financial solvency of the country, and they're laying the groundwork for a productive and prosperous future. But if you believe that, you are really a simpleton, because the rules just simply apply evenly across the board. If you have stuff, okay, let's just go right back to the beginning here. All things on earth were perhaps dark, and then came the sun. And the sun is a transmission of energy that gives photosynthetic plants the ability to photosynthesize and grow and create biomass. The biomass turns into other products, such as soil, which gives rise to seeds being able to grow and produce other things. And then all of the other things that we see on the earth today would be a part of the ongoing cycle that is a delivery of energy from the sun. Now, I'm not discounting creation and God, but the sun and the transmission of energy that makes all life possible is part of that design. Without it, we would have nothing. But we are at a place where we have something. We can go into the ground, and we can dig up stuff, and we can apply energy and tools to it to make things. That is the basis of wealth. Also, the basis of wealth is the plants that grow out of the ground and the animals that are able to be nurtured by the environment and be used by man. And so this is the essence of wealth. There was a book years ago, and I forget what it was called, but a little saying went something like this. Things are made of stuff. Stuff comes out of the ground. You know? And unless you have the stuff coming out of the ground, you don't have wealth. But what we're doing here, if we take a look at our national economy and you look at the surface figure, which is we're somewhere almost at $12 trillion of indebtedness now. $12 trillion of being in debt. That means the amount of stuff needed to be pulled out of the ground to be equal to that debt is about $12 trillion worth. That means that we've been spending well beyond our means. That means that we have been spending, at a deficit, and that means that we are not dealing with wealth here. We're dealing with debt. But that's just the surface. That doesn't even include the obligations that extend out 20, 30, 40, and 50 years because of financial retirement plans and other obligations that the government has. If you combine all of that stuff, it's something around $895 gazillion, whatever that would mean. But I think that you could say that it's a 47 or 57 or 67 trillion dollars. And counting to a trillion a second at a time takes 31,710 years to give you an idea of how large of a number a trillion is. So as these guys are inventing all these trillions of dollars, as they're losing, as you mentioned, all of these trillions of dollars, they're not accounting for all of these trillions of dollars. They're not dollars at all. They are debts. They are debt notes. They are not stuff. If it was stuff, it would be stuff. They would be saying there are these, hundreds of pounds of gold worth X amount of dollars. But they're not saying that. They're saying we're making all these dollars. What they're really saying is we're making all this debt. So there's no money involved here except for this phony money. And with it, they are buying up hard assets. And when they crash this phony dollar after they've spent it into oblivion, after they've created this massive amount of phony debt by use of phony money, and they crash the whole phony system, they're going to be holding these pieces of paper saying they've got title to things. Real stuff, where the gold and silver is, where the plants live, and all that. And we'll be holding the bag. So the best way to describe what's happening now is this country is being looted. You, Mr. and Mrs. America, and your children, grandchildren, their, on ad infinitum, are being looted. And I just cannot for the life of me figure out how anybody can excuse this behavior, except if they think that somehow the rules are different between their personal and household economy and a national economy. And at the fundamental level, they simply are not. They are absolutely the same.
Mm-hmm. Now, in my opening remarks, and I agree with what you said, the Senate and the House of Representatives are also privy to this information. They very well know that Obama is ineligible, and they're covering this up. And sure. We've talked about the bribery and the extortion and the blackmail that occurs amongst all these people. So it's unraveling. Right now, it's unraveling. One of the solutions brought forth was that they make the payments out to those who have been owed money, because they'll put these in banks. They'll put these monies in banks. I can tell you a specific group that I'm aware of has been cheated out of billions of dollars. This is money that's available to start humanitarian projects to help people in New Orleans who are still homeless or still without work, people in California who are living in tents, and other places across the country. We're not hearing any of this. And these thieves, these criminals, are stealing this money and literally taking food out of the mouths of people, taking jobs off the table, and putting people out on the street. You would think people around the world would be outraged by this behavior. And they're protecting themselves or hiding behind the skirt of the military. And I have to say skirt. I mean that, skirt. And I don't mean a kilt. Okay. These guys are wearing skirts. And they're chicken. And they're certainly not upholding their oaths to protect this country and to protect it from tyrants. You've got criminal tyrants running this country. So that's my rant. Anyway, I agree with you, and I should add that, because Congress and the Senate are quite aware, and this is a discussion going on in Washington.
Well, not only that, these guys are all, they've done well with their positions in government. Many of them, if they leave government, end up becoming lobbyists. But in the meantime, they take their you know, definitely above average salaries, and they utilize that money to buy stocks and bonds, and, well, probably not bonds anymore, but stocks anyway. And a lot of these guys have, you know, we don't, of course, like to discuss this, but it's would be insider trading advantages, I would think, because they're members of Congress. And they do quite well in the market, and many of the companies that are getting bailed out are companies that many members of Congress own stock in. And even if they're not, there's other more ingenious and less obvious and overt ways that they can derive benefits from this stimulus cash orgy that's ongoing. And speaking of orgies, another aspect of the disgust that a lot of Americans are feeling right now is that Obama, who shortly after becoming president, indicated his favor of advancing the civil rights of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgendered individuals, and he, by the power vested in him by the Constitution as President of the United States, declared June to be Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride and Awareness and History Month. And so we've got this really bizarre undercurrent that, I don't know, it's really working in my mind in a strange way. While Rome burns, all these people who have decided to take their sexuality into the political arena and throw it around for political weight has a friend in the White House, and it's a huge cultural distraction, and it's such a minimalizing of our capacity as people to celebrate the pushing of body buttons, and particularly with promiscuous and or deviant sexuality. I just, you know, you think of the fall of the Roman Empire and the decadence and the obsessions that people had with pleasure and perversity, and the parallels are really difficult to miss. And when you take a look at some of the pictures of the parades and events that these people are holding, I don't have a personal issue with people who are engaging in certain behaviors so long as they don't bother me or or people around me, and they keep it to themselves and enjoy themselves thoroughly. And the same thing with my pursuits as well. I don't believe I have the right to inflict them on people if they are not interested in receiving it. And I don't politicize my sexuality. I'm, you know, happily married heterosexual man, but it's not something that I wear t-shirts about and, you know, dress up really weird and try to organize parades over. It's just a thing that is me, and I stick with it, and to turn it into this political power trip and part of a major front on the cultural war is just disgusting, and it's so in your face what the political agenda at the high end is behind allowing all of these people to feel like they're being liberated when they're not. They're just being used as a cover for what is obviously the largest theft in world history.
Yeah, that's going on, and be it an abortion doctor, murder, or some drug bust, or illegal aliens coming into the country, or now it's the Iranian election. Imagine the usurper, the illegal alien that's sitting in the White House has the audacity to question the integrity of the election in Iran. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine what we're talking about?
No, it is. It's just absolutely, and I think too, these types of things are such an assault on the sensibilities of thinking and compassionate, fair-minded, justice-minded, freedom-minded individuals that it's shocking, I think, a lot of people into inactivity, because what do you do in the face of this kind of lunacy, this kind of decadent, I don't know, this kind of, ugh. Boy,
all we can do,
look at what this country has become.
Yeah, all we can do, Don, is deal with the truth. That's all we can do. We can only keep hammering the truth and hope that somebody hears that knocking sound, you know, every time the truth comes out, because you cannot, absolutely cannot count on the mainstream media. We know that. This isn't even about attacking them. It's just pointing out a fact that they themselves will admit, if you can get them behind closed doors, that they're being stifled and stymied and censored at every turn. I mean, there is no logic for what they're even presenting as news. Who would care about whether or not some famous slut that's got a sex tape out on the interview on the internet and is being interviewed on Larry King Live is taking a picture showing too much ribs. I mean, these are the types of shows that they're putting out now about these celebrities. They've run out of propaganda. They can't create propaganda fast enough to try to cover up what's going on. And I've personally talked to a few people about what's going on, and I had a neighbor point out to me that his wife showed him an email she got about Barack Obama possibly being ineligible to be the president of the United States. How long have we been reporting this?
Yeah. Oh, about exactly 1 year.
Yeah, exactly.
This really popped up in June of last year, wasn't it? In fact, it was somewhere around June 8th, if I remember correctly, and I can't even remember who it was. Exactly, was it Phil Berg, but it may have predated him even, that there was issues with his birth certificate. And so from about June 8th of last year to present, that case has been building, and the main building blocks for the case are the reticence on the Obama camp to give up a birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now, gee whiz. Well, and you know what? If it were you or me, it wouldn't even be up to us. It's a public document.
Yes.
Think about
yes.
that. If
yes.
it was you or me, whether or not we have a birth certificate would be ascertained through ordinary channels because some investigator guy would say it doesn't exist. Nobody has it.
Mm-hmm.
But in his case, the state of Hawaii is able to say, we have it, but we're not showing anybody. I mean, that's
let me point out a couple of things, especially for the listening audience. Okay, we had the Phil Berg lawsuit, which is the question of eligibility and bringing out the fraudulent aspects. And he brings in the Kenya story as well. And then Dr. Jerome Corsi, who went to Kenya, was detained and prohibited from investigating any further. And then we have this puppet that Obama helped install in Kenya right now, who was trained in East German communist Marxist fascist politics and was responsible for slaughtering some 750,000 people in the process of gaining the office in Kenya. Then we have Leo D'Onofrio's case, which was basically quashed by the Supreme Court, and Andy Martin, who went to Hawaii to get those records, journalist, and I think possibly attorney as well, at least journalist, we'll put it that way, and then Dr. Orly Tates, and then some military people who are coming out suing, who know what's going on, and we're talking about officers. Either current or former military. All of that in light of the fact that this birth certificate was posted on the web, on the Obama campaign site, and very recently, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, in fact, this is going into my Part 7 article, Robert Gibbs admits that he said, we put his birth certificate on the site. He admitted it. Okay? So he's admitting committing fraud and forgery and treason all in one fell swoop. And his reason for posting it was so that the 400,000 people who have signed petitions demanding that he produce his certificate of live birth, the long form version, He said it was posted on the website so they could all download it and sort of laughed it off, making a closing statement to the effect of, I hope we've resolved this problem by the time we finish our fourth year. Hmm. And I honestly don't think he's going to last 4 years. I think things will collapse prior to that, but this fraud will eventually come to a head.
Believe that you're correct, and it's ongoing, and as more and more people become disgusted, I mean, there is a quote conservative resurgence in this country that is just shocking in its meteoric rise in popularity, and it's people that are just I keep using the term, but I think disgusted is probably about as accurate as one can get. And then we have this other specter that is looming, and it's an area of, I guess, that we've done quite a bit of work in over the last decade or so, and it's the pandemic preparedness machinery. And as you know, Don, last week, the World Health Organization, even though there is not an epidemic of illness and death associated with the, quote, swine flu, they don't really care. They triggered the global pandemic preparedness machinery into motion late last March, and even though the story has sort of disappeared from the headlines, once the machinery was triggered, and we've been covering this for about 10 years, so the elaborate and complex nature of this machine is something I kind of equate it to a pot line in a steel factory. When you bring one of those things up, it takes a week or 10 days for it to get up to temperature, and if you decide that you're going to shut it down, it's got to be some pretty serious reasons why, because it takes a week or 10 days for it to cool down and to get it cleaned out as you're bringing it down. and the tremendous amount of time and expense involved is prohibitive, so the thing to do is to keep it running for years on end. Well, that's what this machine is like. It's taken a while to get it going, but now that it's in motion, it's not stopping, and the World Health Organization just last week declared that we're at level 6 of 6 in the pandemic thing. So the pandemic is on. It doesn't matter that there aren't a lot of sick people yet. The pandemic is on, and the preparedness machinery is in motion. And just yesterday, the CDC announced that people ought to be apprised that it's likely that mass vaccinations are going to begin in September. And not only that, Baxter, which is a descendant of IG Farben, by the way, and which is responsible for contaminating flu vaccine with pig flu and letting it loose in Europe this last year, and is also responsible for contaminating some other vaccine a couple years ago with the AIDS virus and stuff. They are charged. I mean, their transgressions in the quality and control department, which have resulted in deaths of people, are not severe enough for them to be sanctioned or to be removed from the contracting pool. But they are now contracted to make millions and millions of vaccines. I think ultimately about 4.9 billion vaccines are going to be produced, which is about 80% of the world's population, by the way, for this, quote, pandemic, which is on, by the way. Don't let me understate that. The pandemic is on. The absence of dead bodies is not a deterrent or an impediment here. The machinery is in motion, and the vaccine or the pandemic is on. So we can expect for some rather interesting times ahead.
Now, we're not condoning that people get these vaccines. Quite the contrary.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I think that the reason they're going to be able to come up with so many vaccines in such a short period of time is they really don't care what they stick in them. I think a bunch of used motor oil and tinctured beer cans and maybe scraping a bunch of pus out of the rotting corpses of the entrails pulled out of pigs that are, you know, factory farmed in Mexico would be, you know, a perfect vaccine. So I don't think that they've got plenty of raw material and filth that they can stick in a vial and tell people it's a vaccine. So they can come up with plenty of it in short order.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being facetious, but not very.
Yes, yes, I understand. There's a sense of desperation and fear on their part, great fear, that we may wake up in sufficient numbers to stop anything. And it doesn't really take a large number of people to influence what they're doing. It's more a question of whether or not we're able to coordinate our efforts together in a unified fashion so that we stand up to this corruption and say, no, forget it, no. I mean, these people have to...
We got a call today from a gal named Lynn Cohen Cole, who just several months ago, you may recall, Don, she wrote an open letter to Hillary Clinton, and this gal was in college with Hillary, and decided when she was running for president that she was going to help her with her campaign. And then she found out what a horrible person she was, what the Monsanto connections and the connections to Big Pharma. And so all this, it takes a village stuff, suddenly seemed a little bit ridiculous. And so she wrote this letter, and it got her in a 3-month writing spree of a lot of interesting things and going down the rabbit hole with Monsanto and stuff, and it was really quite fascinating material. Well, she called today, and she actually called to talk to Ingrid because of VacLib, but she had a really interesting angle on things. She's a Jewish gal, and she noted that Baxter and Hexton, Sanofi, Pasteur, are all I don't know exactly what you'd call it, hierarchical antecedents to IG Farben, which was responsible for killing a whole bunch of Jews in World War II. And so they were experimented on by IG Farben in World War II, and now they're being experimented on again. And she figured that it would be an interesting angle to get the Jewish community to seek exemptions legally for being mass vaccinated, because the company producing it has already been experimenting on it before, and the vaccine they're producing obviously is not going to be tested on anybody or anything. They're just going to do it. And so she wanted to generate some press and get people thinking along these lines, because these companies that are doing this now are the same companies, in essence, that the Nazis used to perform all of these horrible experiments on people in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, boy, talk about coming full circle. Boy, what are we, 60 years later, and the Nazis are still here, and they're still going to try to experiment on everybody, and this time they want to bop them all with a horrible glop of vile filth, and, your guess is as good as mine. I think they want to kill a whole bunch of people, is my personal feeling.
Yeah, I might use the term tentacles for these other companies like Baxter and Novavax and the other ones that are related.
Baxter and Hecht or Horst, I guess that'd be a German pronunciation. And isn't that something?
They're tentacles of the same octopus, that being IG Farben and Monsanto. I'd say Monsanto is probably the snout, the beak of the octopus.
The snout of the snout of the swine.
Mm-hmm. In the past, you and I have talked either on the air or off the air about this connection with the Mon, and Zionism. If you went backwards with Zionism and you talked about the Zionists masquerading as Judeans, of the Hebrew faith, and then back to the Khazars, and then back to, the Mon of Mongolia, and then the Bon of Tibet. You have something coming out of this name, Monsanto. Don't you find that interesting, that Montauk and Monsanto are both two evil entities that use that prefix, Mon, M-O-N?
Well, I have different feelings about stuff like that. I know that there's sacred geometry, and I know that there are some very esoteric principles and laws and knowledge that certain knowing individuals apply generation after generation and keep that knowledge within certain bloodlines in order to maintain degrees of domination over large populations of people. I'm quite aware of that. But when it comes to the symbolism and stuff, I'm not completely certain if they're doing that for their benefit, just because there's power, esoteric power and that kind of thing, or occultic power and that kind of thing, or if they do it because they know that guys like us can't help ourselves, we get really intrigued by it.
Well, it's not so much that
kind
I'm
of
intrigued.
Fall into a trap, so to speak.
Well, Don, it's not so much that I'm intrigued by it. It's more that understanding it gives me a way to put it in its proper perspective. I would say that a company that manufactures genetically modified food and has the intention of controlling the whole food market under that umbrella is a pretty evil entity. And they're not following God's laws, that's for sure. It's a way to convert what would be natural into technology. And I see technology, for how it's being used as something very evil. It has its benefits. In and of itself, it's not evil or bad or good, let's say. But it's how it's being used that makes it evil. The intention of those that are using it that way. So it's worth pointing out that these connections are there, even in the names. It identifies who they are. That's the point I'm making.
Sure. No, I agree with that. There's another interesting thing happened. If you took a look at the May edition of the Ad Observer last month, on page 22, there is an article by a guy named William Allen Thompson, and it turns out that it's Al Thompson, and he was a guy who was a client of Joe Bannister and ended up going to prison on, quote, tax evasion. And he's a very interesting fellow, and he wrote me a letter, and I have enjoyed his correspondence very much, and he used the term idiot in a letter in such an interesting way that just kind of sent me on a mind trip, and I asked him if he would develop that idea, and I gave him some clues as to where my mind was going with it, and I didn't hear from him in a while, and so I'm walking around the house using the term idiot quite a bit, kind of to flesh out my ideas on the subject and, you know, verbalize them and kind of bounce them off Ingrid and anybody else who was unlucky enough to be in the room. And I was getting to the point of being irritating, which was fortunate then that I received a letter in the mail from Al Thompson, and he wrote the idiot piece. And the article that we ran is, How Did We Become Such Idiots? And he based that on the premise that Satan was the first idiot. He challenged God. You know, what an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And from that premise, you can see where he went, and it was quite enlightening, quite interesting. And in essence, there is a natural order, and that's God's law, and that's where we are really fundamentally to be, in the garden. And and everything outside the garden, and I really enjoy logic and the ability to divide everything in the universe into two categories, things that are and things that aren't. And in my world of logic, I can categorize everything into either fiction, or excuse me, into creation or fiction. And the fact that we're talking on this phone is fiction. And the fact that we get a lot of our information from the internet is fiction. That we're wearing clothes is fiction. I mean, all of these things. And all of them are really, we've adopted a way of life that takes us further and further from the garden and really puts us more firmly and firmly into the hands of the fiction influence, which I really believe was a trend that was begun by Satan. Because that's a term and a concept that we can all be familiar with and understand, and we've been going the wrong direction ever since.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, you know, what you say makes sense, because the powers that be would have others think that because we are not doing their thing the way they do it, that we are enemies. An example would be censorship in the mainstream media, and in the alternative media, we have the luxury, if it's the correct word, of telling the truth and not worrying about what someone else says. Now, if you're compromised, if you're oppressed because you played a role in the corruption, then they hold that against you. Being a mainstream journalist, even though there may have been a few people that have tried to break some of the stories that we talk about on a regular basis, we publish on a regular basis. You, as a newspaper editor, me, as a journalist that contributes to that piece of work, as well as to my own website, and on this radio show, we are saying things that people aren't saying, and someone either has to think we're crazy, or they have to be saying, ah, my God, alas, finally the truth comes out. Now, I've had confirmation within the last couple of weeks, Don, that we have over 20 million listeners a night around the world to this show. And I know that we've picked up a number, I referenced this at the top of the hour, a number of stations from around the world, places you wouldn't think, places we were told were very repressive societies. So we're dealing with not just an illusion. Somehow we are co-creating it. I think you agree, even if it's through our non-participation in the whole thing, by pretending as if or being in denial that any of this is occurring, pretending that it's not happening, and basing that on the fact that it could not happen, whether that fact is fiction or or nonfiction, obviously is at issue as well. Don't you agree?
Yes. There's so many. I don't know. It's really something. It's humbling, I think, because I'm finding that a lot of the things that I do and say and write about are rather feeding the energy that is undermining everything. Now, even by opposing, we're still giving energy to things. And by the way, I think that we've also kind of missed the point in a way of what's going on in the world, because the people who are, if they're people at all, who are in control of things, if you'll notice that, you know, some of them over time, they end up controlling property or owning property or whatever. But mostly what they've done is they've figured out since Babylonian times that it's quite a bit of responsibility and work to own property and to raise things or to manufacture things and then to sell things and then to transport things. It's so much easier to regulate all of the energy that goes into producing something and then transferring it to a different location. So that's why energy, that's why Tesla's inventions and access to ambient energy was completely out of the picture, because we can't have that. These people figured out that they have to control and regulate the flow of energy. So the oil, you know, the hydrocarbons and water power and all of those different types of energy, you can control and regulate. And even indeed, you have a piece of property, you pay taxes on that property. If you raise something on that property, you pay taxes on that thing that you raise. If you sell that thing that you raise, it's additional tax. So they're getting wealthy and increasing their political power based on regulating, monetizing, and monopolizing, really, the transmission of energy at every single level of the game. And when you look at it that way, you can see how we sort of feed into that grid, so to speak, with what we're doing. The opposite of what we're doing, or the opposite of what they're doing, would be not doing it at all, which would be fundamentally, I guess, stripping yourself naked and walking north until you run out of roads and people.
Yeah,
and then
well,
be out of the system. And not, of course, not likely are any of us going to do that, because we grew up in this culture and we're addicted to it, and we also are striving to make it better.
Well, as long as our feet are planted on the ground, we're more or less obligated to follow at least, the system the way it exists, you know, in the physical. See, you're talking about people that are attempting to absolutely control everything that's within the physical realm.
And that's how they're doing it, controlling the transmission of energy.
Yeah, and everything they do is focused on separating us from our spiritual selves, which is
absolutely
our higher self, and the source or the location of our true power.
Yep, and how many different ways do we culturally participate and facilitate that? You think about it. If we're sick, we think it's a bug that's doing it, so we get all these remedies to kill the bug, kill creation, not the imbalance that's creating the illness. And the same thing about, oh, you've got to clean your dishes and get all the microorganisms out. Everything has to be sterile. Food has to be sterile. Vaccines don't have to be sterile, but you pump this crap into your body in order to promote health. It's all going back to that satanic concept we were talking about a few minutes ago, undoing the natural balance, trying to be smarter than God, and do things in opposition to the balances that it created for us, and which is just really borrowing the stupidity, the idiocy of Satan when he challenged God in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Well, tell us
now. Got to kill those plants in the yard. Got to don't like those weeds. Dump a bunch of chemicals on them. Oh, if you want your plants to grow well, put chemicals on those too. Don't bother with the natural order of things wherein everything grows perfectly and in balance. You want a monoculture, a whole nice, beautiful, big green grass lawn that you can ride your lawnmower on and whack it and throw it in the garbage every day or every week. I mean, just think about the insanity of the things that we do culturally that just turn upside down the natural order.
Mm-hmm.
What about idiots?
Yeah. Exactly. Now we could go on with these topics.
I think
the next time we have you on, we should get into some of these spiritual issues, because I've come to see this very clearly, and many, many people who are guests on the show state the same thing, that we are really involved in a warfare. This is the one war that hasn't been declared. You know, you've got the war on poverty,
sure.
The war on drugs, war on terrorism. You have all these different wars that they created, and of course they're not
which,
really,
by the way, are only addressing effects of problems.
Yes.
You'll notice all of these are effects of problems. They're not the causes of problems in and of themselves.
Yes, absolutely. And we've discussed on this show how it's just a racket for making money. Promotion of war and dissension amongst countries is all contrived. It's scripted out. It's publicized through the mainstream media to inform us what's going on, as if these people somehow know. And they're not telling anything about the truth. So how can we categorize what they tell us about these flare-ups that are occurring around the world are true when they have no basis or no foundation upon truth to warrant that, if you get my meaning, you know.
Sure.
But this is a spiritual battle that's going on here, and it keeps coming back to it. You made an interesting comment. If these people are even human, we know that many of them are not, and we can talk about that on this show, by the way.
Well, sure. I ran into this guy in Kalispell, Montana several years ago, about almost 10 years ago, and his name was Jerry, and he used to be a profiler for the NSA. He's a very hawkish fellow, very intense, very sharp guy, and he made this comment, and I ruminated over it for a couple of years, and then I've kind of dropped it out of my intellectual repertoire, and it's back, and he said that, I mean, his job was to profile for the NSA. They would say, profile this guy. And he would look at their life and their interests and, you know, get into all the different, you know, the movies they watch, and because they can find out all that kind of stuff. And he would develop a profile with certain parameters that the NSA wanted for its clients, which is the U.S. government, to help categorize these individuals and deal with them however they needed to, whatever the circumstances were. And he said in his travels that he found that 20% of the people, I think it was 20, it may have been 10, but I think it was actually 20% of the people are soulless psychopaths.
Hmm.
And these people ascend to positions of power because they figure out as little kids that they can't continue pulling the wings off flies and sticking firecrackers up cats' butts and stuff like that, because people freak out. I mean, if you're an adult and you're doing that kind of thing, people would get upset. So, and they would begin to question your sanity. So they become cops and lawyers and legislators because they can engage in their sadistic, psychopathic tendencies within the color of law or within certain boundaries that are established as being okay forms of conduct for their behavior or for their
let's not omit certain members of the clergy and TV evangelists,
soldiers.
Yeah.
Soldiering is quite possibly the largest repository of this kind of individual. And sure, absolutely, members of the clergy and, I mean, every position of authority and power wherein sadistic activity is part of the code of conduct, you can bet that, and again, these people are masters at deception because they figured out when they were little kids that they'd better stop pulling the wings off flies because it really is freaking people out. So they've got to engage in their activities in a more subtle and more acceptable manner. And I thought that was a fairly fascinating thing that he said. And I'm looking around and you wonder why these things can be happening. And I believe that that's a rather big, huge piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, it keeps recurring throughout my work. I know you experience the same thing. You're doing one kind of story, and you find the way this other topic functions is based upon the same foundations. An example would be this recent work that Ann Chamberlain did on Cyrus Schofield. And questioning the whole issue of the Schofield Bible, and intuitively I arrived at the same conclusions that she did through her writing. But I thought her articles were excellent. Number one, and
well, thank you. And I'll be sure to tell her she's experienced some disagreement, but it's all. The disagreement is not intellectual, it's not in looking at the facts, it's knee-jerk responses to a lifetime of conditioning. But she's handled it with a tremendous amount of grace, and I really appreciate her for having the temerity to put those things together, because in a way she's taken a lot of heat for an agenda that I really want to go forward. I want people's dogma to be, I don't want them to have their belief systems shattered just because I'm a masochist myself or a sadist myself. I just want people to think. I want them to question their beliefs and reinvent them based upon new and compelling information. Because holding on to dogma and things that just ain't so is one of the reasons why our world is as screwed up as it is. And I wanted to mention one other thing, too, while it's in my mind, and it's kind of echoing something you said a few minutes ago. And I just get this feeling that we are living in two planes of existence, at least, two planes of existence at once. And it's the spiritual and the material, and actions in one have consequences in the other. And
yes.
That's a really easy mantra, I think, for people to keep in mind. Two planes of existence, spiritual and material, and our actions have consequences. Actions in one have consequences in the other.
Mm-hmm. And they're actually trying to, I say trying, they are, but there's this intent to replace our perception of the spiritual with the mental, which is
sure.
Why so much emphasis is put on imagery and thought and keeping your thoughts in a certain pattern, which is where legislation comes into being. You see, they're trying to legalize everything related to how we function as beings. That's like going up to a flower and telling the flower that if it produces, or the plant that produces a flower, that if it produces a flower of a certain color, it's subject to hate speech through the vehicle of self-expression, almost as an art form, or to say to an animal that if it drinks water at a certain time of day, that it has infringed upon its someone else's control of that water. You know, they're treating us actually less than animals, and or of the lowest order of the animal kingdom, and many people aren't even aware of that, are they? They're not really noticing what's going on, the effects of the propaganda and the mind control.
Well, sure, and you know, and I think that actually goes back to my little analysis of how these guys have monopolized the monetizing of energy, and that's how they gain their wealth and their political power. And the truth is, we think that we're so special because we interact with these individuals, and again, I don't necessarily ascribe to them being men and women. I think there's something else. But aside from that, all they've done is they've perfected the art of harnessing and diverting energy for their own purposes. And we think that we're special because we look like them, but to be quite honest, in the movie The Matrix, when Morpheus holds up a D-cell ever-ready battery and says that we are one of these, he wasn't exaggerating. And the truth is, you and me and our hopes and dreams are no different than a stalk of celery, a cow, a blade of grass, a turbine in a hydroelectric dam. We are just storage of energy to be harvested when it's transmitted. That's it.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and like it or not, that's the way it is, folks. And if you don't like it, then go ahead and try to prosecute your unique humanity and see how far it gets you.
Yeah, I might disagree with Morpheus in that I'm not an Eveready. I'm more like a Duracell.
Oh, in fact, I'm sorry. It was a Duracell.
Oh, was it?
It was
okay.
The copper top one. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was my fault, Don. It has been a couple years since I've seen it. I had to replay the memory in my mind to get the exact image. But thanks for getting me back on track.
Okay, if I ever run into Samuel L. Jackson or Keanu Reeves, I'll just mention that to them and see what they think.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, where do you see things heading? I mean, certainly I am not being a fear-monger in talking about the economy and the reality of what's going on. People are seeing this happen. They're seeing their pensions disappear, their 401ks, investments that they had, in some cases bank accounts and real estate, property, things of value that have all of a sudden become almost worthless. Where do you see things headed in the near future? Between now and the next time you're on this show, how's that?
Well, I actually think that these are rather exciting times. The unfortunate thing is this TV show of our life, which has been building for hundreds of years, is turning out to be one big, huge, phony thing where we've stepped way, way, way outside of the garden and into fictional territory. And now we're being left dangling, and it's not going to bode well. I really suspect that we're going to go through a time of some major misery. There's probably going to be, well, I can't quite predict, and I don't want to be a fear monger either. And I actually am a strange fellow. I don't quite understand why. I just don't feel fear very often at all, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
It just maybe it's just because I'm just so full on with the adventure of all this and so obsessed with all the things around me that I just don't feel the fear factor. But I see we are on a collision course with the natural world. The fictional world and the creation is on a collision course. That's just it. We've all participated in this orgy of debt that is collapsing all around us. Every single one of us is part of this, and we can't deny that. We've enjoyed it. We've had the things that we've want. We have. If you live in a city and you've got 24-hour supermarkets within walking distance or driving distance, you can have ice cream any time of the day or night that you want 7 days a week. I mean, what other time in history has that been available to us? And I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just approaching that as a fact of our cultural existence. And that's going to all come to a screeching halt. I'm absolutely certain that the pandemic preparedness machinery on a global scale is in motion and it's not stopping. They are going to have their pandemic. They're going to create it. And I think that they have to do it now, and they're doing all this other stuff to distract us so that they can pull this off because it's their end game. I do think also that they're not ready for it, that a lot of people are waking up, that there are a lot of things happening right now. Communities are getting together. They're preparing. Ours is. I mean, we had a really marvelous spaghetti feed here in this really interesting valley I live in, and everybody's on the same page. And fortunately, where we're at, we have a lot of knowledge and a lot of capabilities, and absent a nuclear attack where the environment goes away, this is a community of people here that's going to pull together and pull through. It's really marvelous that I live here, and a lot of people are living in places where people are pulling together and they're figuring things out and they're going to make it. And it could be difficult for a time. Who knows what's going to come out on the other end? But the world as we know it at some point in time, and I think it's sooner than later, is going to be changing dramatically. And mm-hmm. I would like, you know, if there's one thought, two thoughts that I'd like to leave the listeners with, it would be that you don't have to prepare for, you know, you don't have to build a bunker really fast and you spend tens of thousands of dollars provisioning it so you can live in a hole until the all clear sign comes. I think that people really ought to just think food, water, and shelter for 90 days. If you can get those things taken care of, you're going to be as prepared as you need to be. Because for a couple of days, you don't need to prepare. You can just live it out. And if it's more than 90 days, the exigent issues that are going to pop up are going to be greater than what you can prepare for. So just think food, water, shelter, 90 days. And just be good with that. And beyond that, just be thinking quite seriously about your role in all of this. How are you going to be as a neighbor? What is the community you're living in? Which is the area that is going to be interdependent if the trucks stop rolling? And just think along those lines and talk to your neighbors about it. I think that you're going to be very surprised at how receptive people are because everybody's feeling this stuff. Families are, you know, huddled down in their own houses. They're looking at the news and stuff every night and getting a warped sense of what's going on. But they're concerned on a scale that they've never been concerned in this country, at least in the last couple of generations. So if you bring it up, all you're going to be doing is providing relief to people who have been in their own little homes freaking out on what's going on in the country today mm-hmm. or in the world today. So you'll be well received as long as you are diplomatic about it and sensitive to, you know, certain nuances of their personalities or whatever, but just be thinking along these lines and be preparing and just get ready because things are changing for sure. And yeah. I think also that people ought to really, really be paying attention to what they're doing. Again, you know, we're living two planes of existence, the spiritual and the material. The consequences or the actions in one have consequences in the other, so be mindful of that. This is a very important time. It's a very exciting time. We're on the edge of a huge paradigm shift, and I think that if we play our cards right, which is merely being good people and honorable people, that the world is going to be a much better place when we come out the other end.
Hmm. Yes, I agree. In terms of the paper, the Idaho Observer, I have to tell you that I have been giving a friend who's got a very, very popular coffee shop. It's absolutely exquisite, this place that he has. He makes some of the most interesting coffee drinks you can create. And it's a very popular place, and people like to hang out. They bring a laptop
for conversation.
Yeah, they go online and do some research or take care of their business on a wireless internet connection right in the place. And I take some back issues of the Idaho Observer there and leave them on the reading table. They get many local newspapers. Some are large papers, well known around the country, and those papers stay there. He's got to throw those out. The Idaho Observer grows legs and walks out.
So that's really an honor, and it's really heartening to hear that. In fact, most newspapers, the dominant dailies that are circulated, for everyone that's printed, about every third one is actually read. And these aren't my stats. These are just industry, points of interest that get popped up now and then. One in three actually gets read. Most of them are scanned for headlines. People look at the cartoons. They look at some of the ads. They check the letters to the editor, and they read the TV section or the sports, whatever their thing is.
Or crossword puzzles.
Yeah, exactly. But the Idaho Observer is read, I'm guessing, like an average of three or four times, except in prison, when it's read 30 or 40 times.
Wow.
Yeah, no kidding. And by the time it comes back to the original guy, he doesn't even have a paper anymore. It's been worn out. Just saying that and knowing that it's true is extremely rewarding. I love that thought that we're very well read, that people, not only do they read it, but then they're talking about the articles that are in there. We get some very insightful letters to the editor back. Not always in agreement, by the way, but usually, because we're always right, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really gratifying to know that what we're doing is so thought-provoking that it sparks so much interest and conversation and so much response. I'm honored to be in this position. I feel a little bit more like the conductor of an orchestra instead of an editor for a newspaper.
Yeah. Well, when you talk to Ann Chamberlain about her Schofield piece and the Schofield Bible and the Rothschild connection, tell her that I support her work just in having done a cursory examination of Mr. Schofield's travels, particularly overseas. And in one particular case where he is listed on the ship, well, actually, it's more than one case, but I'm going to refer to one. He's listed on this ship, and yet the manifest does not list him, which is strange. They've created a passenger record off of a manifest that doesn't exist or is obfuscated. They intentionally took a photograph of the back page of some document and put an empty page up instead of the real information. But there is one record of him, and then I began discovering a bunch of aliases. But on the particular record I referenced, lacking the passenger manifest, there is a digital version, and the individual who is Schofield on this document is listed as being on line 14, but the document's not there. When you go to the digital version, you come up with the name of a gentleman whose vocation was manufacturing and inventing typewriters. And I found that really interesting that this is the guy that is actually listed on the ship, on the digital copy.
Yeah, I don't think that was in his curricula vitae, was it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. So, and this guy had a connection to the Rothschilds. This was one of the exclusive manufacturers of typewriters in Germany. Okay, this was a German. So it's quite interesting what developed in the first 5 minutes of my research in that area. So I can already, and I came to the same conclusion, not even having read Anne's piece. Remember, I told you definitely the Rothschilds were behind it. And
no, it is. It's really something. And it's neutralized the Christian community throughout the world for the last 150 years.
Yes.
Just waiting for the rapture.
Yes. Well, I want to encourage folks to give the Idaho Observer a call at 1-208-255-2307. That's 1-208-255-2307. Normal business hours, and that's West Coast time. Also, go to the Idaho, or actually it's Idaho-Observer.com, and you can read what's posted on the webpage. It's worth a subscription, let me tell you. I'm biased because I write occasionally for the paper, and I read it, and it is what Don has described. It's the truth, too, and I can tell you that you will read many things that are not being at all published by the mainstream media in any form. So, Don Harkins, thank you for being on the show.
Well, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure, and hope the listening audience got an earful, and they're going to come away with some new ways of looking at some rather important things.
Yes, and I look forward to having you on in the month of July, if you can make time in your busy schedule.
I'm sure we can, and I look forward to it, and we'll just go ahead and compare notes again, because you wanted to know what I thought was going to happen between now and the next time we were on. Well, I guess I'll be able to tell you then.
Okay. All right. I look forward
to
that.
All right, Don. Well, thanks a lot again, and good night, everybody. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Give our best to Ingrid Castle, by the way.
I would be honored to do that. I'll even kiss her for you.
Okay. All right. I'll say goodnight to you then, Don. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Don Harkins, co-publisher and co-editor of the Idaho Observer. And Don will be back with us on another show. Special thanks go out to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick on the sound. Most of all, I'd like to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow for another great show. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.